From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
It's going to be an interesting show today. We're going to do a topic, focus on a topic that we have not necessarily focused on the Mark Haney Show, and it's around retail. Specifically, we're going to go deep with Rachel Michelin and find out what's going on in the world of retail. She is the president and CEO of the California Retailers Association. We're going to go deep into all things retailers. So if you're a retailer, this is the show for you. If you go and buy stuff from retailers, this is the show for you. So basically, it's going to cover something for everybody on this show. And again, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are building the Backyard Advantage, which is the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And it's all around this culture of love. And so as we share stories or information that can help businesses, can help entrepreneurs, you know, that's what the show is all about. So thank you for joining us on the show today, Rachel.
Great. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. So a lot of us have never heard of your organization before. So maybe a little bit of your background, a little bit about what your organization does and the kind of impact that you make.
Sure. So California Retailers Association, we're the retail voice of both large and small retailers in the public policy arena across the state of California. So we represent a number of national brands, all aspects of retail. So your brick and mortar, grocery, online marketplaces, up and coming new tech companies that are into retail, in addition to our growing, we call them our independent retailers, which really have a special place in my heart because those are the ones that are the backbone of our communities, which is our small retailers. And so we advocate to the governor's office, to the legislature, to boards of supervisors, to regulatory bodies to really talk about and tell the retail story because retail is such an important part of California's economy. We're in every community. We're, you know, every street corner, people utilize retail every day, and we need to make sure that it can flourish in our state.
Does the work that you do tend to be a sort of a left or right from the political aisle? Does it tend to be more right, or is it kind of across the board?
Across the board.
Okay.
And especially in a state like California,
you
have to be very strategic in what you do. Obviously, we're very pro-business. We want to see businesses thrive. You know, we want to make sure that, you know, we're a heavily regulated state. So we try to make sure that we can deter some of that, both at the local and the state level. But, you know, in order to be effective in California, you have to be able to work with various viewpoints, be able to tell the story, be able to find that common ground. And I think that's what I do pretty well here.
And how important is retail? Because we have a lot of tech companies in, you know, in this area and in the Silicon Valley and Bay Area. There's also, you know, we make movies in LA and how important are retailers? Obviously, we know there's brick and mortar, there's malls and that kind of thing, and small businesses that have brick and mortar. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the online retailer, how do we stack up maybe nationally, you know, in comparison?
Well, California, we are the largest retail market in the nation.
Okay.
You know, so we think about it. We're fourth, fifth, depending on who you talk to, economy in the world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, think about that impact that we have both to California's economy. We're sales tax revenue drivers,
too. You betcha.
So when you're looking at particularly a state deficit right now, cities in particular are looking for how do we bring in more revenue? It's your retailers. And you get that sales tax revenue even from online marketplaces. So retail is very, very important. And I think that especially now, particularly local governments are realizing the importance of the retail industry because they're the ones I'm hearing from constantly about how do we ensure that retailers don't close their doors and how do we bring more retailers to our communities.
And not to, I don't want to start off by challenging you, but if you're an online marketplace and you sell out of the state of California, then the sales tax goes somewhere else. It mm-hmm. goes to that particular
Correct.
State.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but for stuff that's done inside mm-hmm. California, mm-hmm. which is a lot because we have
Correct.
A lot of consumers here, you're gonna end up getting a lot of sales mm-hmm. tax through the
Absolutely.
Online marketplaces. Okay, so with that said, I'm thinking about like the most important issues. Well, let me back up a second. I want to get into the important issues, but in terms of important issues, you've got, you mentioned like brick and mortar, which a lot of times, you know, could be a bigger or small business. And then the tech companies could be a bigger or small business. Mm-hmm. Do small business and entrepreneurs face a different set of challenges than a larger, more mature organization?
You know, I think so in certain circumstances, but I think they also have distinct advantages that some of the bigger box stores don't necessarily have. You know, when I go in and advocate, it's much easier to get, I think, sympathy for our smaller independent retailers. I think people understand that mom and pop shop in their community, that, you know, coffee place they go every morning, the gift shop that they go to, they get that. There's a story there. There's a real person behind
now,
that.
Everybody wants those people to win because we know them.
Exactly.
Sometimes the bigger corporation is just that. We just think it's a corporation. It's like a faceless entity.
Yeah. Who is that? Like who's behind the curtain?
Okay. So the small business person, I'm saying this in the form of a question, the small business person and their story really drives better messaging in some cases than, hey, I'm representing, Safeway, let's call it, or something like that. It's like, well, Safeway, it's a big organization. But when we go around and talk about the small grocery store, it might be something, you get more sympathy.
Correct. And here's the challenge is that it's our small retailers that don't have the time because they're running their store, they're running their business. So they can't be up in Sacramento necessarily lobbying and telling that story. It's the larger retailers, like as a Safeway as an example, who have the ability to have lobbyists to join trade associations and those types of things. So it's a partnership. And that's why for when I took over, it's almost 5 years that I've been running the retailers. We've put such an emphasis on building our base of independent retailers because they are the voice and they are very important to the larger retailers because they have to work together in order to make sure that we have policies that they all can thrive in California.
Yeah, so the small business people generally, and I think probably large business to some extent or to a large extent, we want a little bit less regulation or we want the smart regulation, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe let's get into, if you don't mind, like what are the, from a regulatory standpoint or for maybe just even running their businesses, what are the challenges that retailers specifically face as maybe compared to, you know, a different kind of business?
You know, I'm going to answer that a little bit differently.
Okay.
Because I'm going to say, I think the number one business problem and challenge right now in California that we really think we can get some relief on is PAGA, the Private Attorney General's Act.
Okay.
Where those are these hourly lawsuits, wage and hour lawsuits, where you see multi-million dollar settlements that retailers, large and small, have to pay. And what I hear when these small retailers are hit, they can't absorb it. And so they're saying, we're done. We're closing our doors.
All the things that have to do around employees is heavily, it's a heavy litigious type of environment.
Absolutely. So I think that's one, though, where I think we're going to see some relief on this year. We're working really hard to try to make some changes. There's a ballot initiative that's qualified. We're working with the legislature on cutting a deal. So I think there's some opportunity there for some relief. So that's good news.
What happened? When you're cutting those deals, it seems like, it used to be a smoke filled group. Is it a couple of people cutting a deal and going, okay, it's on the ballot this way? Or how does a deal like that get done?
So the ballot initiative qualified. So it's public. You can go read it. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of us who are funding a public affairs campaign, who are saying to the legislature, we need this and we need to take away the private right of action, which is what causes the amounts of these lawsuits to be so high. We need to take away that so that the employee is made whole, but the employer isn't being held kind of for ransom by some of these frivolous lawsuits. So we'll go into the legislature and say, this is what we need. We need legislation. We'll talk to the governor. We're very upfront. This is what we need to do. And I think now there is a lot of willingness to have those conversations because this is really about protecting the employee. And I think that people are seeing that it is, particularly on our small businesses, and not just small business, nonprofits, you know, schools can get hit. It hits everyone. It is a real problem in California. And unfortunately, 9 other states are watching. So we want to make sure we get it right here so that we can keep it from spreading across the country.
Yeah, well, that would be great if we could get some relief in that realm to keep the money out of the attorney's pockets and the disgruntled employee pockets. You know, obviously, we want employees treated fairly and, you know, and safely and all these kind of things. But you know, that some of this stuff goes overboard. We hear complaints about it all the time in these different groups that I am involved with. We talked on the show with somebody from an independent restaurateur, a fast food person the other day, and he was talking about the minimum wage issue in terms of like other things that employees or employers have to face as relates to employees. Minimum wage is, you know, is going up for the bigger fast food places. Correct.
Well, it's going up. And think about it. If, you know, a McDonald's on the corner is now paying $20 an hour, that retailer is going to need to pay $20 an hour, right? So it's not just, you know, the fast food. And here's the challenge on the minimum wage. People need to be paid fairly. Absolutely. But unfortunately, in California, we don't have a minimum wage that adapts to the community that you're in or the age. As an example, I have a 15-year-old daughter. She doesn't need to be making 20 bucks an hour at her summer job. We want her to get a job so she learns about earning a living, the responsibility of showing up, doing those types of things. So we need to, I think, on the minimum wage side, have the flexibility depending on where that business is in the state of California. You know, maybe in some places in Los Angeles, it might need to be a higher minimum wage. It's more expensive. But every time we raise the minimum wage, everything else raises as well. You're not, you know, so this notion of you're making more an hour and that's going to be more money in your pocket, I think it's a false narrative that some of the folks that are pushing the minimum wage are using, because that's not what it's going to result in.
Well, the entrepreneurs that I run around with, they're generally just free market people and let the market dictate what is fair and, you know, what makes sense. But also we're in this environment where everybody's crying about inflation. Mm-hmm. And yet if you're forced to raise prices and it causes everybody to have to raise wages, you know, and it gets passed along to the customer.
Absolutely.
Without question. Absolutely. Yeah. It causes inflation.
You're right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So any other issues in terms of employees and employer relationship that are really pressing at the moment?
I think what we're going to see coming down is AI and how that interfaces. I think talking about, you know, the fast food industry, you see more and more restaurants where you go in and you order on a big screen. There's not as many employees in the store. You know, I've seen things where it's more automated, even making French fries. You know, I was at a conference and saw that happening. So
does the government think that's bad?
We'll find out, I'm sure. But I think that to your point, this entrepreneurship, which California is famous for, right? A lot of these ideas are coming from California because, to your point, businesses are still trying to be relevant and they have to be cost effective. People are not going to pay $25 for a Big Mac at a McDonald's. That's not their business model. But if we continue, you know, I use it as a hamburger, as an example, it's layer after layer after layer of regulation that California puts on. And eventually this burger is getting so big, businesses can't even, you know, put their mouth around it. And I think that's what happens in our state. And no one talks to each other. So you'll have car passing regulation on environmental issues, but then you'll have another regulatory board doing an indirect source rule that imports the ports. It's going to impact a small business and how they're going to be able to get product to their store. And no one is watching and making sure these are all working together. So these poor businesses, and I did this a lot during COVID with small businesses, I would be on the phone with them constantly with Cal OSHA because rules and regulations were changing constantly to help them understand how to manage it. And I think that's the biggest challenge in California is it's incoming from all sides.
Yeah, well, okay, so aren't there jobs that are really difficult to fill? I'm just thinking of fast food being one. Mm-hmm. We invest into tech companies in the Growth Factory, and that's what I've been doing for the last several years. A couple of them are like robots that keep you from having to walk around and manage things, and they do the reports for you and so on. And they're working. It's saving a lot of time. And people, these same people that are worried about losing jobs are really put into positions where they're doing jobs they love more. They're getting put into great jobs versus the more mundane, tedious jobs. That's what I've seen is employees are happy, even though there's a kind of a a fear, there's more of a happiness out there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I was in New York and I was at a trade show of all the new tech in the retail industry. And it's tech. It's a tech show for retail. You saw a lot of that. And I tried to make the point of, especially being from California, there is a lot of fear. These jobs are going to go away, but we're going to upskill these employees. They're actually going to be in positions. You still need someone to run that. You still need someone to oversee it. Like distribution centers, as an example, you see a lot of automation in distribution centers or warehouses, which is great for the environment as well, right? But you have people who have to still monitor that, who are learning higher skilled jobs where the pay is actually higher. But I think you're spot on in that one of the things that I have to do is tell that story to get away from that fear of, if technology comes in, if AI comes in, it's going to take jobs away. No, it's actually—
my job got more fun.
Yeah, it actually is creating what I think some of those advocates on the other side push for, which are better paying jobs, where there is more of a trajectory of these folks going into other industries as well. They can— those skill sets can transfer to other industries that warehouse. You know, maybe it's not retail, maybe it's something else. But we have to get that message out. And I think what happens is that for businesses, we don't do a good job of telling our story. We sometimes let other people tell our story for us. And that's not always a good thing. And that's something we're really focused on at the Retailers Association.
Exciting stuff. So one of the things that I would imagine it caused me some extra headaches was how to deal with compliance around COVID and all the different things that went in when, you know, we had to do, you know, when it first happened, we were shocked. We were cleaning the, you know, we have a co-working space here. And so we were cleaning the counters, I don't know, once an hour or something like that. And, but okay. So what did COVID do in terms of your world and your advocacy for retailers?
Oh my God, we're going back to that.
I just want to make sure I covered it. I want to check that box because some of that stuff still lingers,
oh,
right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was crazy. And I was not even a year into this job. And I still remember the shutdown, sitting at my dining room table going, okay, what do we do? And getting incoming from all over the country because, again, we're the biggest market. We're also the ports. So getting stuff coming in. You know, it was crazy. At one point, I think I had an Excel sheet of 800 different local ordinances across the state. I think that it was a time that where advocacy really came into play. There was a moment where I was on a call and I could tell they were going to shut retail down completely. And I pushed back. You can't do that going into the holiday season. I think it's a lesson learned on going overboard. Because I think the legislature, I think we made some mistakes on how we approached COVID. Granted, those first couple of weeks, to your point, we didn't know what was going on. But I also think it was an important lesson for business because, you know, we needed to push back more. We needed to tell our story more. I pushed back a lot to make sure all retail could stay open. Because I think the other mistake was we had this essential, non-essential thing where, if for me, half of my members could be open, half of my members were closed. And so I have, it's like kids. I have the ones closed. Well, why can they be open and we can't, right? If we sell water in our store, can we be deemed a grocery store? I'm like, no, you can't do that. And I think those were things that we learned. But I will say the silver lining to COVID for me was watching our small businesses and our small retailers and how quickly they pivoted. And I think it made them stronger because they had to learn how to take that. I would get on the phone, take your list of customers. Now you need to reach out to them on Instagram, on Facebook. You would see different innovations of how they were reaching and bringing customers in. The best were when they said, when we did curbside pickup, some of them would put all of their product on the curb. I'm like, well, that's not exactly how this regulation works. But I think local government stepped up as well, again, because of that sales tax revenue. And when you saw that outdoor dining.
People
love that, right? And so I think there are things we can learn. I think there's things that good came out of that. But I also think it's an opportunity for us to, moving forward, if we're ever in that situation again, which I hope we're not, understanding that we can't overreact to the extent that we did, because we did have some really bad unintended consequences.
So one of the things you, as you were coming up the stairs to come into the studio, you mentioned the word security, which some of my friends know this, but I've built some security companies and sold them, and now I'm building others today. And so security is always on my mind, specifically security cameras. We're in a lot of casinos. We don't really sell into retail too much, but thinking about security in retail, you go to the mall, some malls are feel a lot more secure than others, but I can't help but hear about these from district attorneys and stuff that talk about, you know, we can't even prosecute under a certain amount. And it's kind of like, you know, my dad owned a TV shop when I was a kid, and I remember somebody stole something. One of the employees chased him a couple hundred yards down, tackled him, dragged him back to the TV shop, and he got put in handcuffs, and you know, he's arrested. Now, you're supposed to let him go. You're not even supposed to say anything. You're basically like, hey, go ahead and steal it.
Yeah, it's frustrating. Probably number one issue that I've been dealing with besides COVID for the last 4 years. This isn't new.
What is the law? What is something went into effect where you can't arrest somebody or you can't prosecute like under $1,000 or something like that?
So Proposition 47, which was passed in 2014, what that did, it raised the threshold for retail theft from 400 to 950.
Okay.
But what it did, it took away Penal Code 666.1, which was petty theft with a prior. So what happens now is you can steal. It's cite and release. Mm. There's not a consequence. In addition, you cannot aggregate. So what that means is I can hit every day a store. I can hit X store today, a different store tomorrow, $500 a store. So in that week, $2,500, I can do that every week. Put it in my garage, open a little pop-up, sell my stuff. You can't aggregate that. So there's no consequence for the behavior. So we've worked hard on getting legislation. It's an amendment to 47. So the legislature and the governor can put something on the ballot to change it, to fix 47, because I think it's an unintended consequence. I think they didn't, you know, whenever you do major policy via a ballot initiative, especially something like 47, there's going to be unintended consequences. And I think this was one of them. They didn't think that we would be in this situation 10 years later. So we're trying to fix it. And I think fixing those two issues will go a long way because these are repeat offenders. These are not, you know, moms going in and stealing formula. They're not people going in who are stealing because they need, you know, one or two items. If they go into a grocery store and they're someone of need, the grocery store has food that they will give them. These are people who their business, they're entrepreneurs, their business is, I'm going to go steal and I'm going to sell. And here's the other important thing to think about. Zero sales tax. Our cities are losing out from this because they're not collecting that sales tax, right? Because I'll guarantee they're not putting their sales. They
had no income tax either. I mean, it's not like the thief has declared this on his, exactly. On his tax return. Yeah. So that's interesting. So you mentioned, unintended consequences, because I guess every decision that we make in life has consequences that we might not have expected.
Correct.
And so this legislation gets passed and, you know, there's negative unintended consequences for the retailer and for society. Mm-hmm. And talk about inflation, you know, correct. Also drives inflation when this kind of thing happens. Because retailers got to jack up their price, and you know, that's what happens. So thinking about that, what is the mood in terms of, can you find a consensus that we made some bad decisions in there?
You know, it's interesting. I am cautiously optimistic that this year we will see some changes to that law. I think that there is a willingness now. The governor released just last week, I believe, a framework of things that we've been working with him over the years on changes to this. There's conversations going on at the state capitol. There is an openness to saying we need to fix this because it's gotten to a point where law-abiding citizens, we're having to change our behavior to accommodate criminals. When you think about going into a store and having to wait 10 minutes to get, you know, your razor out of the locked box, right, or the underwear out of a locked box now in some stores, when people are witnessing this happening all the time, in communities, it doesn't matter anymore across the state. I don't care where you live. It's hitting you. People are done. Californians are fed up. And so I do think there is an opportunity there for some collaboration. You know, my viewpoint is, you know, we need to work with all parties. You know, sometimes when people push a policy, they get very attached to it and they don't want to admit that there needs to be changes. And that's why we're really focusing on, we need to fix it. Californians voted for 47 because they were promised that individuals who committed crimes would go into diversion programs. It was about getting people help. That doesn't help happen now, because if I can continue, if I'm an alcoholic and I can go into the liquor store and steal every day and there's zero consequence, why am I going to go into a diversion program? Mm-hmm. But if I hit that point and I have to stand before a judge and my choice is you're going to serve some time in jail or you can get help, then we want to make sure those people have those options. And that's what we've been pushing for, because it's not about mass incarceration. A lot of these people are repeat offenders who are doing it because they can, because to your point, there's a flaw in our laws right now and we need to fix it.
I would think that the commercial real estate people would be supportive of the work that you're doing. You know, I hear about Nordstrom and other mm-hmm. retailers closing in their stores. In San Francisco was mm-hmm. an example. There's an exodus there because mm-hmm. of the, I don't know that it's all retail theft, but there's basically, once people start closing up, it just mm-hmm. crime sort of mm-hmm. sets in and it becomes an undesirable place to be, to live, to shop, and, mm-hmm. and so on. And that drives down the value of our real estate.
Correct.
Are they part of your support system, or is it pretty much the retailer?
No, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just at their big conference a couple weeks ago speaking about this issue. Hugely important to property owners. You know, to your point, in San Francisco, you know, I worry about Westfield. That used to be the like jewel, right? Mm-hmm. You had Nordstrom, Bloomingdale's, high-end restaurants, high-end stores. I was just there yesterday in San Francisco. It's not that anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's an example. But yet you look at other places, you know, the Grove in LA, you look at the Beverly Center, they're coming along, they're staying intact. But my fear is we only have so much time before the tide turns. And that's why we need to show that in California, we're not going to tolerate this. We need to prosecute. People need to be held accountable. And I think that's going to set a huge example and hopefully bring back some of these businesses. And it's not just retailers either. You know, you lose a major retailer as an anchor, that impacts everyone in that community.
You bet.
And so especially our small retailers, who I always try to point out, every time you hear about a large retailer closing like Nordstrom, I'll guarantee there's six or seven small retailers that closed exactly at the same time that don't get the attention, but it's just as important that we're losing their businesses.
Yeah, we lose those businesses and we're losing jobs. And
correct.
It's just mm-hmm. you know, there's a...
Well, and we can't hire, right? You can't hire employees. So you talk about, you know, free market and cost and all that. We can't even hire some of these folks because of the perception that it's not safe to work in the stores. And so it's a real problem. And so we have to change this dynamic and we have to make law-abiding citizens know it's safe to go into the stores. And that's really what we're about. We want our employees to be safe and we want our customers to be safe and we want the neighborhoods we operate in to be safe.
So I live here in not very far from our office here. We're in Rockland, so in the greater Sacramento region, which a lot mm-hmm. of our listeners and viewers tend to be Sacramento mm-hmm. Venture people, entrepreneurs, and you know, my friends and stuff, mm-hmm. my kids, my wife and stuff. You know, I got a couple of listeners that like that. But we love Placer County, and mm-hmm. you're from El Dorado County.
Right.
Sacramento faces different kinds of crime issues. How does the greater Sacramento region sort of stack up from on the retail front from a security standpoint? How are we here?
So unfortunately, Sacramento County is on the top 10 lists of cities with the most organized retail crime in the nation.
Organized. Oh, wow. That doesn't sound like the guy walking in a liquor store to drink.
No. These are organized crime rings as well, but they feed into... They, you know, this all feeds in together, right? Mm. People start off by stealing and getting away with it. And then these crime rings will recruit them into their bigger enterprises.
Okay.
But I think there's a, you know, Placer County, I was really excited to see we were very instrumental working with the governor to get local law enforcement grants for to help combat retail theft. And I know Placer County got a grant and they're putting signs and working with small businesses like, we will prosecute to the fullest extent of the law. We will call the police if you shoplift, which is a deterrent. And so it's interesting to see what they're doing here to really combat retail theft. I think in Sacramento County, you know, the sheriff there has done, you know, blitzes where they'll go in and they'll try to stop retail theft again as a deterrent. So you're seeing that happening there. El Dorado County, I know the sheriff is also very much engaged in certain parts of the county where, you know, there are hot spots. So I think local law enforcement is trying to do everything they can. I think the challenge too, in some places, let's take San Francisco as an example, they're 400 officers short, right? Mm. So you can't hit every part of San Francisco. They're trying to build that up, but that is also one of the challenges that we're facing, is we need to get people into law enforcement, which is challenging right
it
now,
is.
Right?
It is. And
so I think that there's a lot going on. You know, I was very happy to see these grants going out across the state and seeing how local law enforcement and district attorneys are using that funding. So I think we're going to turn things around here. And if we can couple that with changes in the policy, that's a game changer for businesses across the state.
Well, that's one of the businesses that we're actually working on. My son is the CEO. We have an organization called Allegiant Vets, and we're building America's finest workforce, and it's all veterans. Mm-hmm. So we've got this very large community of veterans. And as they're getting out, they're thinking about their dream job. Mm-hmm. And I think where maybe years ago, you know, we haven't been doing it forever, but years ago, people get out of the military. It's the perfect thing to roll into law enforcement.
Yeah.
There is a desire to do that, but I think that desire, we don't hear 100% desire to go into something like, who wouldn't want to be a sheriff of the Placer County if you're coming as an infantry Marine? You know, you've been taught to, you know, use guns yeah. and defend yourself and provide security. Why wouldn't you want to be a Placer County sheriff, a Sacramento County sheriff, or a, you know, Roseville police mm-hmm. officer? I mean, it's a great job with great benefits.
You know, I think that's perception, I hope, is changing. I think that law enforcement was under the gun, you know, and I think we're realizing the unintended consequences of that as well. When we didn't invest in law enforcement, it's kind of what you get.
The whole defund the police
Correct.
Stuff, yeah.
And I think that, I work with a lot of sheriffs, a lot of law enforcement. You know, we do a lot of local events of retail theft roundtables with local businesses and law enforcement. They are stepping up. They want to be able to have the resources to do that. That's why I work so hard to try to get them the resources. I think law enforcement does an amazing job, and I think they want to continue to do that, but we do need to change that. And I think it is changing.
It's shifting. There's a pendulum. You think there's kind of like a pendulum type thing?
I think and that happens. Mm-hmm. We usually, sometimes we go in one direction too far, and then we come back. Sometimes we go in the other, and then we come back. And I think we're coming back because I think people are realizing we need law. You have to have rules of law for our society to operate. And when you don't have rules of law and you don't have people who are able to enforce those rules, including district attorneys and judges who will hold people accountable, then this is what you get. Mm-hmm. And I think people are getting tired of that.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, if it becomes safer, if retailers can be more empowered to win, that's phenomenal.
Well, they can be retailers. Like, I didn't know my job was going to be law enforcement public safety.
Oh, my gosh.
But that's what I've been doing for so long. We just want to sell our products. That's what retailers want to do. But now, to your point, we're, you know, doing, you know, training on if someone comes in with a gun, we're training people if they're high on fentanyl, you're having to train your employees to deal with people with mental health issues. You know, it's not that safe environment that it used to be. And part of it is because we went too far and we need to bring that back. And that's what we're trying to do with the legislature.
That's awesome. Well, thinking about staying on security, I have to imagine that the security issues that an online store or an online type business faces as relates to security are much different than brick and mortar. So as brick and mortar, the malls and so on, the small business, the little shops, the downtown shops, they face a set of challenges that is different mm-hmm. than what maybe an online, you know, a digital mm-hmm. company would face. Does that obviously? So can you contrast that? Because is more yeah. business just going to go online? Is it, you know, as they close the Nordstrom here, it hurts Nordstrom, but does a lot of that business just go online?
It does. Okay. But, you know, you have to think about our online marketplaces now have the heightened responsibility of making sure they don't have stolen goods being sold on their marketplaces. So they've got that level of security. You also are seeing more sophistication in privacy issues, in identity theft, yeah. you know, all of that they deal with more so on the online marketplace. So I think it's a give and take on each, but you're absolutely right. You know, and when, you know, you see an Amazon and you see these small brick and mortar stores who are saying, you know, I'm done. I don't want to pay all the costs. Rents are going up. Personnel's going up. They're moving on to these online marketplaces and setting up their stores online. And people, and this is an outcome of COVID. How many of us sat there? I did on a Zoom call. Shopping, with, right?
What?
Like, I know.
No way. Put your picture up.
Totally. No one did that, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, my dog, you know, every day it was the dog, you know, every Zoom call, dog's barking. Why? Because the delivery person was there yeah. dropping off people. So I think people are more accustomed to online shopping. So I do think it changes things. But I also think people are going back because there is something to be said to going yeah. into a store, holiday season, going into the stores, they're decorated, they're the hustle and bustle. Mm-hmm. People still enjoy that. But I do think that it's a give and take. And I do think online marketplaces are having to adapt just as much. The other thing is they're adapting in, people want things immediately. And that's becoming harder to do as well, again, because they have to hire people to deliver the goods to the stores and to the customers.
So thinking about that, you know, I was thinking about how much money, if I'm managing a P&L as a retailer, how much do I need to set aside for my brick and mortar in terms of like theft, right? So you got a line item that you set aside. Okay, I'm budgeting next year. I should have 5% of sales as theft. What kind of percentage are you seeing people forecasting for, you know, expecting for their, you know, just that's the cost of doing business theft.
It's huge. And it's not just that the shrink, right? That's one item. It's also the investment, right? You're investing in more security guards. Mm-hmm. You're investing in more technology. You talk about cameras. You're talking about training your employees. You're talking about caging up or putting products behind locked glass. One of the big things we're starting to see is people coming in, they're setting aisles on fire to distract. So they'll go to an electronics section and steal. So you're losing all of that product. So, and you have damage to your store. So it's not just a loss in terms of product going out the door. There's all these other costs that are being added to it. And that's why we have to get a handle on it, because it really is having, you know, a broader impact. And those are decisions that when a big store makes those decisions to say, hey, this isn't working, we're going to have to, you know, close the doors. Think about what a small business is going through as well. They can't afford to hire all the security guards or all of these other deterrents to do. I mean, they're just trying to hang on. And unfortunately, they're the ones that I think are closing faster than some of the bigger brands.
Are there, what tools and tricks besides, you know, the security yeah. guards, the security cameras and stuff, are there, you know, I've heard of Neighborhood Watch and things like mm-hmm. that. Are there groups of retailers and small businesses mm-hmm. that have sort of teamed up to address this problem? Because doing it alone and throwing your hands up and just going, yeah. crap, it's hard to beat. Are you seeing anything working out there in terms of like solving the issue in lieu of advocacy or in addition to the yeah. obviously wanting some advocacy?
Yeah, I think you're seeing small retailers coming together, like you said, kind of the Neighborhood Watch, then working directly with their local law enforcement and saying, you know, here we're tracking, here are some like high times that we see a lot of this activity, and then law enforcement can show up and just be a presence there to deter it. I think one of the biggest things is calling law enforcement when you see things happening, being good witnesses. You know, the cameras are really important, being able to turn that over to law enforcement so they can build these cases. You know, deterrence work, But we need to see more of it. But I really do think small retailers are finding ways. I'm really encouraged by what property owners are doing as well. You know, property owners, you talked about the business properties. They're really investing in more security mechanisms for their stores because they don't want their stores to leave either, right? So I do think you see a lot of that collaboration. And I do think you see local government and local elected officials paying a lot of attention to this because they know it's such an important aspect to their bottom line and their budgets. So they want to make sure that they're doing everything they can to give resources to these small businesses so they can keep their doors open and be safe, right? Again, it's not about losing product at the end of the day. It's having a safe working environment for employees and places for people to shop.
What trends are you seeing? We'll skip away from security for a minute. What trends are you seeing? What's sort of on the horizon that's either you're really excited about or maybe keeping you up at night right now in terms of retail?
You know, I think that retail and the tech industry are bleeding into each other. I think there's so much more tech coming out. There's some really exciting things that I saw a couple of weeks ago in New York that I'm like, wow, this is going to be like crazy. I mean,
like, what'd you see?
You know, things about how you can smart mirrors where you can just hit a button with a shirt and it puts it on your body. So you, instead of having to try it on, you can see it on your body in the mirror. Mm-hmm. Things like, you know, I call it Uber for scheduling, you know, apps where they're working with retailers where more flexibility, where I can say, hey, you know what? I don't have anything to do this weekend. I'm going to go work at a retail store for a couple hours. I'm trained in customer service. I can go in. And so really the flexibility, I think about our younger people who want flexibility now. They're not necessarily the ones that want to be behind a desk, 9-to-5 job. I think those types of things were really innovative. Looking at some of the automation, I think coming down and the way we can upskill a lot of individuals, but utilizing, you know, let's just be honest. I saw the robots. Why, like, look like they're humans, you know, mm-hmm. those types of things that I think are going to be really interesting to see how that's integrated. I think it's a different way of thinking. And I think that what's interesting to me is retail people just think about it as brick and mortar, right? Or online. It's so much more than that. And I think it's such an exciting industry to be a part of because there is so much innovation. These apps, you know, you talk about the circular economy, how we're able to recycle goods, how we're part of the whole sustainability piece of it. I think you're going to see more of that coming out in the upcoming years.
You bet. I mean, there's a company here locally called Origin Materials, and mm-hmm. Those guys? They've actually went public. They're uh-huh. you know, they're a public company now, and they're working with companies like Pepsi and mm-hmm. Nestle for their packaging, mm-hmm. and because they're these plastic bottles that we use have a lot of petroleum mm-hmm. in them. That's their base. And so what if we could use garbage or, you know, mm-hmm. something that is considered waste and replace the petroleum in it? That's mm-hmm. you know, more sustainable stuff. So that's actually happening a lot here in Sacramento as well. And I think Sacramento is, you know, it's positioned well to be an advocacy mm-hmm. Play, you know, if that's where your passion is, you know, growing up, thinking about like your 15-year-old daughter, where might she, you know, want to locate? Where would, you know, where's a good place mm-hmm. to live and grow and, you know, seek your goals? Sacramento's got some really good things. Oh, and so yeah. If you're into wanting to save the environment mm-hmm. and that kind of thing, or if you're into building, changing the way, you know, politics works mm-hmm. and things like that, Sacramento is really a great place. We have a lot of attributes here.
Oh, absolutely. You think about the ag piece of it, right? You think about the entrepreneur piece of it. You think about, you know, the advocacy, like you said. I mean, there's a lot to do here. It's very, it is, you know, we're very cutting edge when you think about, you know, a lot of people came to Sacramento because of the innovation, because of the venture capitalism, the things that were going on here. And I think that's where you're seeing retail move to as well, is mm-hmm. that more venture capitalists are getting involved, more tech is getting involved, because it's all bleeding together. And I think it's going to be exciting to see where Sacramento plays in this whole, you know, I'm trying to get more of these types of trade shows out to California. They always do them in New York.
Oh.
I'm like, we need to get them out to California. Obviously, it's an international, you know, people fly in. Mm-hmm. It's easy. New York's probably easier, but I think it's such an exciting thing to bring here because we are the largest market, right?
You bet.
You know, and so we are the fourth, fifth economy, biggest economy in the world.
And we have a lot of the cutting edge stuff that's coming out of the Silicon Valley Bay Area and even places like Sacramento.
Absolutely. And so I think that we, again, it goes back to, we have to tell our story. We have to change the narrative. This is a great place to be. It's a great place where I think you see retailers will try out stuff in this market sometimes. They'll try out some of the new tech here because they want to see how it plays. But again, I think part of the challenge and why it's so important to me on the advocacy side, we have to change the narrative that California is a good place to do business. And when we go back to the regulatory environment, the policy environment, some of the challenges, talk about the minimum wage and all of that, we also need to advocate to make sure, and that's what I do a lot, is California has so much to offer, but we have to make sure that it's user-friendly for businesses. And I think sometimes businesses get a little frustrated because it doesn't seem that way. And that's one of my goals, is to constantly be that ambassador to say, you know what, businesses want to be here. They want to invest. You have to help us, policymakers, regulators, to make sure we can work collaboratively, because we have the same goal. We just have to work together to make sure we can meet them.
Agreed. And one of the things that sort of crossed my mind throughout this conversation, especially after you mentioned that you had a 15-year-old daughter and where is she going to work and so on. For parents out there or young people, one of the best things to do in terms of personal development is to work around small business people and entrepreneurs. So you can go get a job for a big corporate, and this is nothing against getting a job with a big corporation, mm-hmm. but these starter jobs in fast food or in anything, if you can go around, if you can be, put yourself around the entrepreneur, the small business mm-hmm. owner, you're going to learn things, life lessons that that you don't learn when you're working, you know, as the 5,000th employee mm-hmm. in a company. When you're the employee number seven on the mm-hmm. on the pecking order, seventh out of seven, you're gonna become friends with the owner of the company. You are gonna learn how to work mm-hmm. and what blood, sweat, and tears can lead to, especially as those businesses start succeeding, and also the opportunities that end up creating if you go to work for a startup or an entrepreneur that is successful, you get noticed and you can skyrocket through the ranks and really build yourself a great life. And so just people, parents listening out there, instead of just telling your kid to go get a job, you might want to, you know, encourage in a certain direction.
I have a 19-year-old at University of Utah too, and she did that. She worked for small businesses in El Dorado Hills, and to watch her now she's a business minor. She's into the entrepreneurship. She thinks about it on her own. She goes out and finds her own jobs in Utah. She loves it, and she learned it because working for, especially mm-hmm. in a community like El Dorado Hills, mm-hmm. we're still a little bit of a small community in some aspects. You know, she worked for a couple of small businesses throughout high school. And you're absolutely right. I mean, you learn those skill sets that sometimes you don't necessarily learn. Again, big business is great.
Right.
You know, big retailers are great.
You can learn a great thing out of Starbucks, but it's different from the mom and pop.
Absolutely. And I think that you feel connected to your community as well. And I think that's important, as, you know, trying to get her to come home to visit me, right? It's like you want that connection to her community. And when they work for small businesses in the community, they have that connection. She'll go in and see her old stomping grounds where she worked when she comes home. And, you know, we still will go up there. It was an ice cream shop and get ice cream there. It's not the same. And it's not your daughter, you know.
What's the name of the ice cream shop? Do you remember?
John and Bonds.
And it's in El Dorado Hills?
It's in El Dorado Hills. Okay. Safeway Shopping Center.
El Dorado Hills.
Lake.
Go out there and get an ice cream cone from a small business, an entrepreneur.
Yes.
I love doing that. I mean, our message is to put your money where your town is. And we speak specifically around investment, is that we should invest into local startups and local businesses and local entrepreneurs. But, you know, we always talk about shop local, but invest local, shop mm-hmm. local, work local. If you want to save the environment, don't drive or fly all over the country as much. But supporting locals, there's something to that that I think is lost. And obviously you cover all of California and I'm more like, I'm Joe Sacramento guy. But okay, so what did I not ask you? What in retail did we not cover today that maybe is important to make sure that we do?
You know, I think we covered a lot. I think that retail just has an incredible story to tell. You know, retail to me is your first job. And we employ people all the way after retirement. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of retailers offer our seasoned employees opportunities for that social interaction. They might not need to earn necessarily that paycheck, but to be able to go in and have that purpose of going in, interacting with individuals, having that, that's valuable beyond belief, right? And so I think that we can, people come in and out of retail in different parts of their life, right? They might come in, you know, I need a summer job. Oh, maybe I just want a seasonal job. Maybe I love this brand, so I'm going to work there so I get the discount and my check goes all the way back, right? But I think there are so many aspects to retail, and I think that's what's so exciting about the industry. You know, a couple of years ago, everyone said, oh, retail's dead, brick and mortar's dead. I don't believe that. I think it's coming back. I think it's coming back strong. I think we're coming back strong from COVID. I'm really impressed with the small businesses. I think they learned a lot, whether they wanted to or not. Mm-hmm. They learned a lot during COVID on how to adapt their businesses that only are making them stronger. And so I'm excited to see where retail ends up, you know, in the next 3 years, the next 5 years, the next 10 years. I think it'll look very different, but I think it will always be a fabric of our communities across the state of California.
Well, thank you for joining me on the show, yes, sharing your wisdom, your experience. Excuse me. And just great conversation. Great. So thanks.
You. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage. And of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.